The Commissioner of Cynicville wonders how many people have ever sat down to sort of contemplate how the halls of fame for each of the big four North American sports and the way that they select their inductees sort of reflects a particular view of how the world works. Now, I'm saying this as a sports writer in recovery who's getting wrapped around the fact that because he doesn't cover sports so much anymore, no one will ever listen to anything he has to say about what goes on in the big-time world of profession in the sports. So there's about a 72% certainty that of all the idiots in all the idiot villages, I have to be the only one with a browser tab open for the respective selection that explains the respective selection processes for the four halls of fame in sports, which, as you know, are the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown, the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio, the Basketball Hall of Fame in Springfield, Massachusetts, and finally, the Hockey Hall of Fame, which is a tourist trap in downtown Toronto. And, of course, the inspiration for today's Commissioner of Cynicville, since the Hockey Hall of Fame selection criteria or selection class was announced on Monday. Baseball, you know, baseball's all about elitism. You know, baseball's such a hard sport to play. You know, best hitters don't get on base 6 times out of 10. A great pitcher will still lose a third of his decisions, and it's got this sort of mass voting system with the Baseball Writers Association of America that sort of tries to winnow out, you know, the fringe candidates and get down to just the very elite of elite. It's complicated, and it kind of works like the Electoral College. But every so often it does screw up, you know, like the Electoral College did in 2016. Football kind of comes about the eye test. You know, did you see the guy play? Do you know what he did? Because most of the players on the football field don't have individual stats. And the ones who do, you can't really compare across eras. I mean, do people know how many rushing yards Adrian Peterson had compared to how many Jim Brown had? Basketball sort of takes like the takes all kinds approach because it's the one Hall of Fame of the four that really doesn't tether itself to the dominant professional league. It's the Basketball Hall of Fame. It's not the NBA Hall of Fame. It doesn't have the word pro in it. And then there's hockey, which is kind of like the ultimate sort of clubby atmosphere. If you're pretty good, someone who's inside the rope will vouch for you. Anyways, circling back to how those all work, because I don't know how many people really think about it. Whenever these things get announced, someone will always say, "Well, I wish the Hockey Hall of Fame was more like the Baseball Hall of Fame," or I don't really see huge debates come out when the Pro Football Hall of Fame class is announced the day before the Super Bowl. It's sort of a thing for football fans and. But I don't think it ever really spreads out to as much as the NFL tries to sort of appeal to a broad audience. I don't think the average person who's not like a football first person really thinks too much about the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Basketball's Hall of Fame really seems to fly under the radar of the casual fan for all seasons type. But anyway, so I sort of thought after we're sort of looking at who got into the Hockey Hall of Fame yesterday, and I'm sure if you're listening to this, you already know who it is, so you don't need to rhyme off the names. But I always thought, do people really think about how each one works? So start off with the oldest one, obviously, is the Baseball Hall of Fame. And it's the oldest one. It's got the highest threshold for entry, and I've sort of always thought it kind of works like the presidential primaries. It's a little bit confusing and a little bit complex. And it sort of starts slowly, and among all the sort of wonks, like every December they start talking about who's on the ballot, and you have your fringe candidates, guys like Juan Castro and Dennis Baez are sort of like the Harold Stassen of the Hall of Fame ballot every year. Like guys, like you're kind of like, huh, what the hell? Like, why is he even on there? And they get like zero or one votes, and drop off. But it's like I say, it almost kind of works like a national election in the States. You have the 400 some voters of the Baseball Writers Association of America who kind of act like the delegates from each state ultimately, and you have your little voting blocks, and you have the people who vouch for each candidate, and it sort of does become a lot like a popularity contest. But ultimately, baseball is about the best of the best. It's not about nominating someone who was like a complimentary player, someone like, and it's very good about, for the most part, very good about, whittling out people who, whose accomplishments were kind of inflated by the era they played in. So someone such as Larry Walker, the great, outfield gold glove winning, multiple batting title winning outfielder, probably one of the best Canadians to ever play in Major League Baseball, but he's not going to be in the Baseball Hall of Fame, nor should he be. I see people say it all the time, but for God's sakes, the guy's played in one of the friendliest eras for hitting, and his career slugging percentage isn't even on the road. You take away Coors Field, it isn't even above 500, so please don't come at me with that ever again, that Larry Walker should be in the Hall of Fame. Sorry. But yeah, so baseball, again, they really prize really only letting in the very best people, and unfortunately, sometimes they do miss some really good people in the process. Then in football, the Pro Football Hall of Fame, obviously they don't put it out to the masses because can the average person who covered the sport, in Green Bay tell you about an offensive lineman who played in the eight for a team in the other conference? No, they can't. Football is, it kind of works like being on a football team. You have your endless meetings and there's a lot of repetition, and I guess there has to be a high tolerance for boredom in order to be a Pro Football Hall of Fame voter. What the Pro Football Hall of Fame has is a 46-person selection committee, so one per NFL city, plus some at-large voters, someone from the Writers Association, and they do it by mail to get their to starting off in the fall during the season. They work to get that down to a sort of a long list of 25 semifinalists every year. And from there, they keep working until they get to 15 finalists. And then it finally goes into a room where they argue it out, and they get down to the, handful of people every year who get to slip on that gold jacket at the induction ceremony in Canton usually on the first weekend of August. So like I say, so far we've established, baseball, we're putting it out to everybody. It's kind of like the ideal version of how a democracy is supposed to work. And football is sort of how politics really works. A bunch of experts get in a room and they really don't take the public's input. And perhaps they shouldn't, because let's be honest, until, outlets such as Football Outsiders came along, it was really hard to, determine who were the most effective players were at most of the positions on the field, other than maybe quarterback and running back. And even wide receivers, it's really hard. It was until, advanced analytics came along, you couldn't really tell, apart from an obvious drop dead, no doubt about it, all-time greatest wide receiver such as Jerry Rice or Randy Moss, you couldn't really tell which wide receiver was really efficient and who was sort of a product of his system and the guy throwing him the ball. Looking at you, Marvin Harrison. So you've got those two dualities there. Then there's the way the Basketball Hall of Fame works, and I think it's probably the least commented upon of the four. And again, as I sort of noted off the top, it's the one that's least attached to the dominant league. Now, what's interesting about basketball is it sort of starts off with, someone has to be formally nominated, and it goes to a screening committee. There's one for North America, and there's one for women, which is interesting because the Hockey Hall of Fame, which I'll get to shortly, has an 18-person selection committee, and there are zero women on it, even though they vote on women's hockey players. But meantime, basketball has an entire committee to screen nominations for women's basketball players and women's basketball coaches. So they have like these screening committees, and basketball is kind of all about, it takes all kinds to make a basketball team. You have to have that quick point guard, but you also have that 7-foot, guy who blocks out the sun and blocks out everything else. And it's also probably most, just as basketball really does make an effort to take in, be inclusive and sort of be forward thinking. That's how the Basketball Hall of Fame is structured. It allows international, it allows more room for people who had great playing careers that weren't in the NBA. And it also has, you know, other all these different entry points to nominate people who just contributed to the growth of the sport, or African Americans who played in the era when the sport was segregated. And there's also a veterans committee. Like, over the past 2 years, in fact, the Basketball Hall of Fame has inducted 8 players, 4 of whom did not play in the NBA at any time before 1980. You know, that someone like Zelmo Beattie gets in, there's someone that the Veterans Committee had to advocate for because he was a fantastic big man in the 60s and 70s, but the teams that he played on, the St. Louis Hawks and the Utah Stars of the ABA, don't exist anymore. So there's no one saying, hey, what about Zelmo, the way they would say for, say, a guy who played for the Lakers or the Celtics back in their heyday. And meanwhile, they put in, you know, Cheryl Swoops, you know, one of the, you know, players who was instrumental in the growth of the women's game. Yao Ming gets in because of his sort of career as a sort of trailblazer coming from China. And Cumberland Posey, who's already in the Baseball Hall of Fame for his career during the segregated era, also gets in for his basketball career. That's how. Like I say, there's these different views. And then we sort of come to hockey. Like I say, it's almost like this buddy system. It works the way the sport works. There's this little sort of, always this little barrier there. It's this little clubby atmosphere. You need someone inside the velvet rope who can get you in. And there's really not a lot of transparency about how the vote goes. And it's also reflective of how the hockey industry is kind of like, if you didn't do it in the NHL, it didn't happen. It has an 18-member selection committee, which is, I think, the smallest of the four. 17 of the 18 either work in the NHL or covered it journalistically. And that's not to impugn anyone's integrity or anyone's judgment. It's just a statement of how fact. The only exception is David Branch, who's the commissioner of the Canadian Hockey League, which is partnered with the NHL. And the guidelines for the Hockey Hall of Fame say nothing at all about having someone who is versed in women's hockey. It just seems like every couple of years it's kind of like, oh yeah, Angela Ruggiero, yeah, I've got to get her in. Oh yeah, okay, Daniel Goyette. I mean, yeah, you know, as Rob Del Mundo pointed out on TMLFans.ca, there was no talk at all about waiving the 3-year waiting period for Haley Wickenheiser, the same way it was done for Bobby Orr and Mario Lemieux and Wayne Gretzky, even though, considering her impact in the sport, it should have been. So I just thought, you know, it's kind of weird how they all work. But yeah, the Hockey Hall of Fame, it kind of is. Like, if you were good enough, someone will be like, hey, you got to have him in here. And people criticize that, but on some level, it kind of works, because that is kind of how the culture of the sport. It isn't about separating the, you know, creme de la creme the way baseball is. And it's not about, you know, the sort of wonks getting in a room to make these finite distinctions. It's kind of like, yeah, hey, you know, the gang's all here. And I sort of came to this after sort of working through my own feelings, because personally, of the 4 NHL players who got in, 2 of them I was kind of like, huh, what, yeah. Dave Vanderchuk and Mark Recchi combined never made a first All-Star team, and they made 1 second All-Star team, but they both lasted, you know, 20 years in the league and put up a lot of points, and they were part of Stanley Cup winning teams, and that in the eyes of the hockey insider intelligentsia makes them a Hall of Famer, instead of in every other sport they would just be looked at as a Hall of Very Good Complimentary Player. But I mean, that's just the way it is, and I can live with it. And then you see people saying, well, Paul Kariya wasn't a Hall of Famer. I'm like, really? 5-time first or second team All-Star Paul Kariya, guy who had almost 1,000 points in his career despite playing through the dregs of the dead puck era, not a Hall of Famer. Like, give your head a shake. So really, I just would hope that, you know, when these things come up in the media, I mean, to most people I know, the Hockey Hall of Fame, it's 2 minutes of, old highlights being presented on Sportsnet Connected or whatever, but as someone who really values sports history, I do try to think about these. I spend way too much time thinking about these things and sort of how the politics of it all works. And, you know, I thought it would be an interesting podcast to just sort of go through all four. I'm probably idealizing the Basketball Hall of Fame because it's the one I'm the least familiar with. I've visited the other two that are based in the States. I actually work less than a half kilometer from the Hockey Hall of Fame, but I just can't bring myself to ever visit it because I don't think the way they vote on it has credibility, but I'm not a hockey person, so I don't really find that I'm able to sort of get wrapped around how it works. But after sort of thinking about all four and sort of the way people are valued in the sport for the way they contribute to a team being good, yeah, I'm sort of more at peace with how hockey does it. I mean, you know, I can live with, you know, guys who weren't, you know, world-class players necessarily, but were an important component of the teams they played on and played on, you know, quality teams throughout their career, you know, Recchi and Andrzejczyk. Sure, I can accept that this is a sport that makes room for it, and instead of criticizing, just saying, hey, it works differently, and it works differently in basketball, and it works differently in baseball, and it works differently in football, and hopefully, by sort of going through this, I've sort of made people aware of, if you've hung in this long, of how, you know, the politics of immortality and being able to say, you know, Hall of Famer on your resume works. That's really all I had to say about the subject. I guess my other quirky note of the last few days is how much I love tie games in football. There was one in the CFL last week, Calgary and Ottawa season opener, Grey Cup rematch. And it finished 31-31. Both teams failed to score on the first series of overtime. And then after Calgary was held to a field goal on their possession, Ottawa was unable to move the ball and kick the 3 points for the tie, which is exactly how those same two teams' regular season game in Ottawa ended last year. But I sort of love it just because it's anomalous. And sometimes, you know, nobody deserves to win, but I think the real thing is because I'm resolutely contrarian. Not the kind of contrarian that's contrarian for its own sake, like a lot of people on Twitter. Like, hold on, wait a minute, what about? No, I'm not like that. I just think I kind of like something that's a little bit muddled and not so clear-cut and not so arbitrary. And let's face it, a lot of things like the shootout in hockey are completely arbitrary. Sometimes a tie is an accurate reflection of how a game went. And plus, I don't know if there was ever so much, it's not like these things ever get put to a vote, but at some point we just became this sort of taken for granted type thing that everyone hates ties. The media sort of is like, oh, fans deserve to see a winner. Well, no, fans don't necessarily deserve that. They deserve to see an entertaining game. And if that game should end up with two teams having the same number of goals or points or runs, so be it. I would feel better about a baseball game that was called 4-4 after 12 innings rather than have to sit through 19 innings before someone pokes a single through a drawn-in infield and after batting against a non-pitcher. This will be another podcast at some point. But yeah, all four of the tie games, one of those quirky CFL things. Obviously, the NFL has ties too, and I think the NFL might even subtly acknowledge that tie games aren't a bad thing because they've cut regular season overtime down to 10 minutes. Meantime, I'm at almost 20 minutes, so that's all. I'm going to try to keep posting these. I don't know how many people find them on the Podbean app, but if you look at my Twitter, Nate Sager, NaitSayger, I do post them there, and I will keep the most recent one pinned up for a couple of days until I post another. And if you have me on Facebook, like I say, this is more of a thing. This isn't something I'm looking to make a business out of. This is, again, is kind of like a therapeutic for me as a recovering sports writer, someone who's not in, I used to be someone who was in press boxes, you know, three times a week or whatever, and always like waiting for someone to call me back for a story. But, you know, I do something differently in the media now. And this is just a way to sort of have a voice and sort of stay out there. Anyways, till next time, in the words of the great Max Jackson, if you can't play a sport, be one. Take care.